Welcome to the Quick Talk Podcast with Joshua Latimer, where we discuss business, life, family, faith, struggle, fire, pain, and ultimately winning.
It's time to take massive action. Look, I can't work harder on your life or business than you do.
It's ultimately all on you.
You know, God created all the food the birds would ever need, but he doesn't put it in their nest. You've got to go get it.
10 out of 10 people die. So how about doing something today that actually matters while you still can? Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Quick Talk Podcast with me, Joshua Latimer. I miss you guys. It's been a little bit of a hiatus. Many of you know I moved into my new beautiful home in northern Michigan, and my wife has been slave driving me, doing all kinds of husbandy things. So I'm just getting back into the groove of Quick Talk here. It's been a few weeks without an episode. I deeply apologize to all of you, but I'm ready to talk today with Jim Palmer. Now, I've actually talked to Jim in the past, and I have a relationship with his daughter, who runs a company that I've done business with. And Jim is an interesting guy. He has an incredible story, and he has a new book out. It's called Just Say Yes. I thought it was really interesting, and I asked him if he'd be willing to come talk to us about it. So basically, Jim is a marketing expert. He's a small business coach. He does a lot of different things. He's the founder of the Dream Business Academy. He runs some masterminds, things like that. And he's just a serial entrepreneur. Sounds like someone I know, Jim. So welcome to the show. First of all, how the heck are you? And where are you at the moment?
Well, we're floating in Rhode Island at the moment, Josh. And thanks for having me on. And when you told me about your new home, I just had this picture of hanging curtain rods and or window shades, which have those quarter inch screws. And when you try and put them into the wood, the screwdriver always goes right into your finger.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope. Oh, my God. I hope you don't have to do that.
I have to do that and more, Jim. It's a disaster. Plus, I'm not particularly handy, but well, I can't let people know that because then they won't think I'm as awesome as they think I am now. So people don't know this. Jim lives on a boat. He bought a yacht. I told you he was a serial entrepreneur and a dreamer and all this stuff. And if I'm not mistaken, you're in a big giant boat floating like in a harbor in Rhode Island, correct?
We are. Well, we're in a marina, so we're actually tied up to a slip. And although we could go anywhere, I mean, we hold 580 gallons of fuel. We've got 90 gallons of fresh water. I got a generator that'll run the entire boat. But, you know, we do have a dog. So I'm not one to every time he has to go out, I have to get out the dinghy and find land. So, yeah, for the most part, we're tied to a slip in a marina. That's our rent. So we rent a slip. So we do have a little bit of rent.
Okay, and you do travel here and there and go up and down the coast whenever you want, correct?
That is the plan. Our home base is the top of the Chesapeake Bay in Maryland, and on April 30th we cast our lines, as we'll say, and we took a trip about 420 nautical miles up the coast of New Jersey, through New York, out the East River into Long Island to get to Rhode Island. I've never driven a 50-foot boat before. I've never been in the Atlantic Ocean other than on a ferry going to Martha's Vineyard. And when we got here, honest to God, I got off the dock, probably semi just because I'm an immature idiot, but I kissed the dock. And but it was also like, my God, I can't believe what we just – and literally for days, Josh, Steph and I were like, can you believe what we just did? I figured a 50-foot boat, we got almost 1,000 horsepower, two diesels, and but I felt so insignificant when we were bobbing in the ocean. There was about an hour. I told Stephanie that if we were on the Pennsylvania Turnpike and it was like this, I would pull over and wait this out, but you got to keep going. The inside of our boat looked like a tornado went through it. We thought everything was tied down or put away and everything was all over the place. But the thing that was interesting, and it's partly why I wrote the book, because it's so much like being an entrepreneur. You know, we've been really blessed the last several years with the growth of my business. But I think until that moment when we did that first trip up here, Stephanie and I came to realize that we were pretty much living within our comfort zone. It seems, you know, we all have natural gifts. Mine is the marketing, and I just love working with clients. But none of that, even though my business was growing, seemed like a stretch, if that makes sense. But when we started tackling this, and then all of a sudden I went from 30 feet of water into 4 feet, and I need 4 feet to not hit ground. And I'm telling Stephanie, find me deep water, damn it. We're kind of sniping at each other. Mm-hmm. And she's looking at the thing, and she goes, I'm not God. But go to your starboard. There's a channel over there. I mean, we were doing things that were just way beyond what life had become quite routine. So it's very fun.
Absolutely. And it's completely like being an entrepreneur because, you know, the whole ready, fire, aim thing that kind of feels like when you start a business, or the one I like is being an entrepreneur is like jumping off a cliff and building a plane on the way down.
That's right.
Which I mentioned.
That's it.
And then before we started recording, I mentioned to you a quote I heard recently. It was for business owners is you can choose certainty or you can choose freedom. But if you choose certainty, you risk losing both. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, would it have made – first of all, I just turned 59, and when I told my financial guy what I'm doing, I mean, at this stage, you know, I'd like to retire in maybe 5 years or so, or slow down, we'll call it that. But it's like the least reasonable thing that we should do at 59 is to buy a boat like we just bought. I mean, that is the – by far the worst investment you can make, but we're going to do it. And, you know, Stephanie and I were like, we're going to go on a big adventure. I mean, we raised our kid. We had four kids and we're in this house for almost 30 years, acre and a half of grass. Every year, as winter, a tree would come down. I'd spend a month sawing it up and carting it around and hurting my back. And, I mean, it was great. We had a pool for the kids, but I was done with that, Josh. And we were trying to figure out what was next. And Stephanie retired from her 15-year career in early childhood development, and that was our last, I want to call it a geographical anchor, if you will, because yep. I could do my job anywhere. And once she retired, we're like, well, what do you want to do? And we almost were going to live in the Caribbean for a year. We started binge watching HGTV's Caribbean Lifestyle, and well, that looks fun, but I just don't want to go sit somewhere. And she said, what if we live on a boat? And boom, sign me up. And that started the whole thing. That started the whole thing rolling, trying to find out the right boat. And the thing about being like an entrepreneur again is, should we have waited a year? Should I have taken some more boat driving courses? Should we have learned a little bit more about what those buoys are out in the water? You know, all that stuff. Now, if any boaters are listening and they're gasping, yes, we did take courses, but you know, you never feel 100% prepared.
No, because theory or classwork or any kind of coursework can't prepare you for that first, you know, rough waves or storm or something will happen that will catch you off guard. And that's the way business is. That's the way life is. I mean, I have a young family, Jim. I don't know if you know this. I have four kids and a baby on the way. And last year, well, when I sold my service company a couple years ago, I moved to Costa Rica. And so me and my wife always joke because our household can be totally chaotic, right? With all these kids running around. And whenever it's really stressful, we look at each other and we say, you know what we should do? We should have another kid. Like, we're being sarcastic. You know what we should do? We should totally live in a boat and float around and have very little experience in the ocean. That's not – but you know what? That is what living life big is. We moved to a foreign country. My kids got to experience a different culture. I want them to see their father take intelligent risk, but risk nonetheless, and not necessarily succeed every time, but watch me fight. I want them to know that they can dream big and they can do literally anything. And I'm not being cheesy. Like, you can literally do anything. And I think a lot of people tend to think small. And one of the
Oh my gosh, Josh, I so relate to that. When I started my business in 2001, my girls were 13 and I had a 15-year-old and a 17-year-old son. And but the girls, and I said to my kids, I said, I'm going to be very successful and I'm probably going to make a lot of money, but I want you to remember what you're watching right now, like scraping by, no money. My first year was revenue free and I went to work at Target to put a little money in the bank, or not money, to put food on the table, and you know, all these different things. And I said, one day you're going to see me successful, and it's very important. I don't want you going, oh my God, look at that. I want you to remember these 5, 6, 7, 8 years, whatever, you know, before I turn the corner. And so, and now look at my daughter, Jessica. Little did I know, I thought she'd just, you know, be a career woman, and she started a business and she's killing it. So it's interesting what your kids see everything, right? They see everything, they hear everything. It's all going in to their brain. And so it's really important. I really applaud your moving to Costa Rica. Steph started following this family called Boat Fam. They have two boys and they live on a boat. Now, I personally couldn't do that. It's so stressful. We watched our grandkids this past weekend and you cannot let them out of your sight. Obviously, one misstep, they're in the water. You know what I mean? So it's very frustrating, but it's very –
it's risky.
I don't know what the right – it's risky, yeah. So, but, you know, to go to Costa Rica, a friend of mine, Clinton – Wasilishin has two boys, and they live in Costa Rica. He's got a gym business in Canada. I'm like, man, that's really living the dream.
Absolutely, and the dream doesn't mean it's perfect. You're allowed to still have a messy dream. I think people have misconceptions, but how do people even do that, Jim? Let's get into some meat and potatoes here. I always talk about self-limiting beliefs, but there's so many reasons that people are held back from either having a bigger business or a more automated or systemized or just healthier business, or even starting a business. From your perspective, because I know you work with a ton of people, what's holding most people back from, I don't know, taking it to the next level?
Well, I wrote about this in Just Say Yes. It's called the what ifs. And honestly, when Stephanie and I, you get very excited when you say, yeah, I'm going to start a business. I'm going to grow a business. We're going to have this new product, or we're going to sell our house and live in a boat. And you get excited about the romantic part of the adventure or the dream or whatever it is that you want to do. And literally, I think we both woke up the next day, and we actually didn't verbalize it because we didn't want to spook the other person, but we both started having like, oh my God, what are we doing? Like, what ifs? And, you know, I started reading a lot of books of people who did exactly what we did, became liveaboards. In this one book, this guy is actually a businessman. He's a musician, a copywriter, and he does his whole thing. And he goes, there was one chapter this was literally the turning point for me, Josh, why I wrote the what ifs. And I'm reading his book, and he goes, you know, a lot of people dream about living on a boat, but they think about, well, what if I don't know how to drive? What if I crash into somebody in a tight marina? What if I hit ground? What if the engine falls out? What if we sink? What if we, you know, all the what ifs start going through your head. And he goes, yeah, but what if every day you wake up and you do figure out what that noise is? You learn how to fix a pump. You do this. You realize you can drive through a crowded marina and not hit anybody. And he says, what if one day you come to realize you really are a badass boat driver and you have the adventure of a lifetime? And unless and until you say yes, you'll never know what that felt like. And that resonated with me because I was having all of those thoughts, right? And
oh, yeah. I love that. I liken it to someone standing, right? They're like in a field and there's a mountain in the distance. And for me, at least for me, because I'm a nut job like you, Jim, I get obsessed with the mountain. I say, that's where I'm going. I'm going to go there. I'm going to stand. I visualize. I can see myself standing on top of the mountain. But what I see holding people back is they only can see the sticks and the snakes and the rivers and the ravines and all the stuff in between the mountain and where they are right now. It's the how. How am I going to handle this? What if I lose my – what if I don't sell enough accounts? What if I – and it's not that those things aren't important, but if they're your total focus, you can't succeed, right?
That's it. You know what? I've always had this ability, and I don't know what it is. Maybe it's overconfidence or whatever. I always had this thing that I will figure this out. I can't even tell you how many things are on this boat because I'm not a mechanical guy. I can do some things, but I'm not like an engine guy. And I'm thinking, what the hell's that noise? And Steph's like, just call somebody, and I will spend hours tracking down that noise and seeing what it is and figuring it out. And you know, for us to go and literally, we came out of what I would call where we felt like a cork in a washing machine. And we came out of the Atlantic Ocean right into New York Harbor. And we were both exhausted. We've been on the water for 4 hours, just went through a crazy hour. And we looked to our left, and I swear we were startled. And it was like, there's the Statue of Liberty with her arm up there. And we both got chills. But then after I saw the Statue of Liberty, Steph goes, look on your right, and there's giant shipping boat, and then there's ferry boats going back. We were suddenly in New York City traffic on the water, and I'm like, I've got to negotiate my way over to that dock, and I've got to dock without hitting somebody. And I'm telling you, my heart is racing out of my chest.
Oh my gosh. So New York City traffic is just as bad on the water as it is in
the
streets.
And we became friends with a boat captain, and he warned us about that. And he said, those taxi drivers are just like the drivers on land. He said, they don't give a crap how big your boat is, how new it is, or anything. They're going to take those people on that boat from Manhattan over to Liberty Island, and you better not be in their way. And that's what I did. I'd slow up, I'd swerve, I'd turn around. Yeah, I was doing everything to give those guys a wide berth. But that's the kind of thing. It's like, and then we did dock, and you know, it took me three tries because my boat is kind of tall, and it was very windy. And the guy at the gas dock, he tied one line, and next thing you know, my bow's like blowing out, and I'm trying to bring it back, and I'm like, okay, what did I do? What do I do? The port engine? I'm like going through all my training, and I hear him yell. He goes, what are you doing, Captain? I said, I'm trying to dock the effing thing. I was really tired and frustrated, to be honest with you. And we docked, and I talked to the guy, and I, well, first of all, we took on 250 gallons, but I said, I need to sit here for half an hour and have lunch. He goes, I don't think so. I said, let me talk to your manager. I talked him into letting us sit there and chill because I really needed to decompress. Steph made us we had tuna sandwiches looking at the Statue of Liberty on one side and the skyline of Manhattan on the other. Half an hour later, we left, went up the East River, saw Rikers Island. Was it LaGuardia Airport? And it was just an unbelievable. We drove through New York City. And then next thing you know, we're in Long Island Sound and we found a marina for the night. And, you know, it was, but we did that. And Josh, I'm telling you, people who want to start a business and they're thinking, I got to figure this out. You don't need to figure it out. You have to have a pretty good idea, do a little bit of research, and then you go. And every day you wake up and go, crap, I got to go a little bit to the left or a little bit to the right. I got to speed up, slow down. Hey, I need to go get some more money or whatever it is. But I guarantee the people that you look at who are highly successful, they did not have all the answers. They didn't. All they did, they had a whole gut full of confidence, and they knew they were going to be successful. They just didn't know exactly how they were going to do it. But they went, and they didn't wait for perfect or certainty.
That's right. And I think people over plan or over analyze things is a almost like a complex defense mechanism. It's really procrastination. It's like a complex version of procrastination because they're scared because of fear. And one thing I like to tell people is I always tell people that I'm working with one-on-one that there are a lot of people that are highly successful that are dumber than you, mm-hmm. right? Like there's nothing wrong with you. Like, that's why sometimes, even in business, I see people that are killing it, and maybe they're not particularly likable, or they just rub you the wrong way, or they're not even a good person, but they're winning in business, and people say, how the heck is that guy winning? Because they don't even know what they don't know. They're just doing stuff. They're just going for it. They're just taking massive action, and that creates momentum, and then you figure out the hows as you go. I mean, you figure out how to cross a river when you get to the river. You figure out how to park the boat when you get to the thing by the Statue of Liberty.
That's right. You know, it's funny you say that, and I know this is going to make me sound very judgmental, but I remember back in the day, I used to go to a ton of seminars, and I'm looking at these people on the stage going, what in the hell has he got on me? How come I'm not up there, right? And it, like you say, I'm like, what the heck? And he's killing it. And I'm like, okay, that's it. I can do this, right? And so it is astounding. And the one thing, and I think you nailed it, Josh, the one thing that those people have that when you look at those people in finger quotes and you're saying, I don't know what's going on with them. I'll tell you what's going on with them. They have a childlike approach. And if you think of a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old, 4-year-old, they have no fear. They can do anything and nothing's going to stop them, right? I mean, that's kind of the essence of being a child. And I know because Nathan was going to do whatever he wanted to do this weekend and nothing was going to stop him. And Lucy, who's my granddaughter, who's got ready to turn 2, we get to the pool at the marina. She's jumping in the water before I'm even there to catch her, like no fear. And when you can retain that as an entrepreneur, and I don't care if you start when you're 20 or 30 or 50 or 70, you want to retain some of your childlike approach to business. Nothing's going to stop me. I have no fear. And don't worry about the outcome. Don't worry about what people think. Let that go. Just know you're going to make mistakes. But I know I'm going to be successful and I'm just going to keep going. And that's really when you look at people who are successful, I don't want to take away from whatever skill or talent or something they invented, but that's really what drives successful people is their ability to just keep going.
If I've learned one thing the last 2 years, after I sold my company, I've been able to work with hundreds of small businesses. I've done speaking all over the country. I've done a bunch of different things that are all new to me. And I've met a lot of highly successful people. And what I learned is that there's very little difference between a quote unquote high earner, high achieving, highly successful person and your average business owner. It's all mental, first of all. But it's the amount of action I see being taken. It's that the people making a lot of money, they do stuff. They're constant motion. They're going. So to the listeners, to go back to you guys, because I miss you guys, visualize what kind of business you want. And visualize the kind of person you need to be to have that business. But don't make the mistake of thinking that you have to be Superman or some sort of, you know, X-Men or something to achieve it, because you don't. You just need ridiculous focus. As Jim's book says, just say yes, just go, just do it. You know, ready, fire, aim. You're going to figure it out. But if you have grit, which we could talk about that, Jim, I think that's what you were alluding to. If you're relentless, if you don't stop, you almost can't fail. Unless you quit the band, if you walk away, you're going to fail. But if you just keep going, it's almost impossible for your business to fail. Do you agree?
Oh yeah. So a couple things I want to mention. First of all, people ask me, well, how'd you get through your first year? Like, seriously, it took me a year to get your first client. Yes, it did. And the word ridiculous was my mantra. And I kept saying to myself, all right, I know I'm going to be successful, and whether I get my client tomorrow or actually I don't know when, but how ridiculous would it be for me to quit now after I just spent 2 months, 3 months, 4 months? By the time it was 10 or 11 months, I got to be honest, something. But it almost became more so for me, Josh. I'm like, how ridiculous, I kept emphasizing that word, would it be for me to quit now? I've just been at this 11 months and 12, my 12th month is the magic month that I kept telling myself. And sure enough, I got client one, and then I got two, three, four. They all came in succession because I was planting seeds and, you know, kind of tilling the soil for the whole year. So, but that speaks to another thing I wanted to mention, and that if you are going to go, if you are going to just say yes, I think one of the worst inventions for entrepreneurs is the microwave oven. Yes, you can cook an entire Thanksgiving meal in 2 minutes and 45 seconds, but you cannot grow a highly successful business in 30 days. So if anybody says, just plug this into your funnel or do this little widget or do this or do that, and here's the one thing you have to do to kill it on Facebook, you forget about it. Every successful business, and Josh, you know this because of the type of business you had with service-based business, every successful business is built on relationships that you have with your customers, clients, patients, vendors. You can't make those happen overnight. You can't microwave trust. And so you do have to put in the time to develop those relationships. And to the degree that you can take the relationships you have, which the relationship with your customers is your biggest asset, and you can nurture those and proactively engage those to, yes, you want to maximize the profit of each and every relationship you have. That's how you're going to grow a successful business.
You can't microwave trust. I love that. That is really good. I feel like that just kind of came out.
It did, and I'm writing because you're going to see that's going to be a meme because I just said that, and I go, oh, I like that.
Jim's next book, You Can't Microwave Trust, is due out in October of 20. No, I'm just kidding. I think that's awesome. And I talk about relationship marketing a lot. I'm actually obsessed with that. And while you're talking, I was thinking I need to have a church choir in the background sound effect during that part of the interview.
Yep.
Because
yep.
I'm just like, yeah. But you're right. You cannot just push a magic button and have people know, like, and trust you. And this goes back to my point of taking massive action. So when I learned Spanish, I realized, okay, let's say it takes me, you know, 2,000 hours of work to know Spanish at a basic competency or something. I can make that take 10 years, or I could cram it into 1 year, right? And so with your business, with relationships, creating momentum, all the seeds you planted, you could have made that take 10 years or take 1 year. And I think if we're just constantly going like maniacs and trying and I always call it imperfect action, that it's going to be okay, everybody. You just got to go for it. But you're right. It does take time. You can't microwave it. But I see some people take such little steps, such a tiny, you know, dab or a dash of action that they just kind of get discouraged and nothing ever happens. What do you think about that?
It's true. I'm working with somebody who's starting or has a coaching program, but they really need to like 10x their business and revenue and every way. And so I was helping them with you know, a new landing page, autoresponders, things like that. Because at what point in the autoresponders do we go for the big ask? I'm like, what big ask? To get into my high-end program. I said, are you married? I kind of knew this. So I just ran them through it. Yes. Well, did you ask or were you asked to be married on your first date? No. I said, would that have creeped you out? Yes. Well, it's no different in business. Just because they downloaded a free report or downloaded an audio or watched a video, you're suddenly going to ask them to spend $1,000 a month or $500 a month. It's a total disconnect. It's going to be icky and they're going to run away. Well, when can I do it? After you've built the trust. Let's talk about how we do that. And by the way, be prepared for months. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not weeks. It's not days. It's likely months. But the cool thing is, once you build momentum, once that snowball starts going down the hill, you got the current revenue. Now you're generating more future revenue. You're generating the leads. It all starts going, but you can't go from zero to click your finger and have a six-figure business in the coaching business. Not one that's going to last, by the way. So anyway.
I agree. I think it's about expectations. And so if your business is stuck, everybody listening, make sure you do have the right expectations. I use an example in a talk I gave in Florida last winter where everybody prepares for the wedding, but no one prepares for the marriage. And it reminded me of that when you talked about being married, because the wedding is this big, fun, sexy event, and everybody, you know, eats good food and has drinks and laughs and stuff. And that's great, but that's an event. The marriage is the lifetime. It's where all the work is. It's where all of this other stuff is. And with your business, you know, just because you start one doesn't entitle you to anything. The universe owes you nothing. We got to prepare and have the right expectations for the marriage, meaning the long-term view of our company, not just the wham-bam, thank you, ma'am, especially with sales, like you said.
Yep. I did a video once called Dating After Marriage, and I purposely titled it. First of all, it fit, but I also like to go a little crazy with that, see if I can get a lot more views. But basically, it said the same thing. You know, when you're dating, you're putting your best foot forward. Maybe you're shaving, showering them with gifts, whatever that looks like. And then all of a sudden, you're married, and maybe after 30 days, you're both going to work. You come home, it's still, hey. But, you know, 2 years later, it's like, hey, you know, you still got a date. I mean, it's still a relationship that needs to be worked on. And so I forget why I brought that up. Oh, I know I brought it because, again, that is the customer relationship. You need to proactively, continuously date. You know, the late, great Zig Ziglar used to say, I still date the redhead, you know, after he's married for 50 years. I date the redhead every day. Yes. You know what I mean? And that's really what it's about.
Hey, guys, you got some free marriage advice there, too, for all you married entrepreneurs. That's good. You know, I want to ask you, your book, you know, Just Say Yes. You know, I think we kind of are being clear on kind of the concept of it. But one of the messages in there is about this bigger, bolder, faster, which I think we talked about with, you know, we got to go, we got to create momentum. But how does someone know if they're doing that or not? How do they know if they're giving it maximum effort? Maybe they think there are, but they're deceiving themselves, or maybe they really actually are. How do they know?
What's interesting is most people know what their upper limit is, and I think that's a self-imposed upper limit. So, for example, let's say you're a coach and say, "Well, I want to add, I want to get 3 new clients this month," and you think, "Okay, maybe that's a big goal. Maybe it's a little. It's really not. I mean, you know, with some really serious effort, if you're really serious about it, you can figure out a way to get 3 new clients. But what I like to do is say, add a zero to every goal. So instead of 3, go for 30. Now, if you're saying, I'm going to add 30 new clients, automatically your brain probably goes into a little bit of a panic. But it your brain has to open up, because if you have to ask your subconscious mind, what do I have to do to get 30 new clients? You're thinking so outside your normal everyday. Do I need to do another speech, do more interviews? Do I do this, that, and the other thing? Because it's really not that hard to get 3, but to get 30. And what I'd say is, if you had a zero and you figure out what is the bigger, bolder, faster way to grow your business instead of slow and steady as she goes, if you fall woefully short, let's say you miss your goal of 30 by half and you get 15, well, how much more is 15 than 3?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what bigger, bolder, faster is. Now, I'll tell you, I know you're a man of faith like I am, Josh. And after I wrote my 6th book, which was Decide, it was the last time I was on your show, I'd say, I'm done. It's a lot of work writing a book. When I used to have a home, my home office, I had 3 books behind me on the left, 3 books behind me on the right. So it made a nice little visual when I'm doing
my
interviews.
Now you're going to mess it all up. You're going to have 4 on the one side. Yeah.
And this past January, I do an event called Dream Business Academy that was the first week in February. And so, you know, the preceding 30 to 60 days is 24/7. Your mind is fully engaged. And so it was January. I think it was very, very cold. Steph and I had rented a small one-bedroom apartment right on a farm, actually, because we sold our house. We weren't ready to move on the boat. And I'm out walking the dog, and I just love walking the dog, having the sun come up. It's like 5:30, 5:45. And I just felt the spirit say, bigger, bolder, faster. And I thought, ooh, I like that. I said, I'm going to teach that at my event. I'm going to work that into the agenda. And I said, no, you too, Jim. Bigger, bolder, faster. You're coasting. That's the message I received. And I thought, oh, I got to figure this out. And then, I mean, it really, the conversation that I had, it said, I want you to write a book. It's always, a book is powerful because that lets your message get out in a big, to a bigger audience than just those people that either attend your events or listen to interviews or things like that. So that's the power of a book, first of all. And I thought, I don't really want to write a book, but I've learned not to say no when I'm being directed. So that is really the genesis of that book. Just say yes, because as a, you know, Stephanie and I just said yes. And you know, I want to say something a minute ago. You talked about bigger, bolder, faster, Josh. And for people, did we just say yes and we're going? Yes, we did. But this plan actually was birthed about 3 to 5 years ago when I said, you know what, I don't want to work this many hours. So I started creating systems and procedures, and I've got a team of 13 people that run my 4 internet businesses. So I said, all I want to do, I want to work with my coaching clients. I'll do my events. And I'll do interviews, and that way I can do that 3 days a week. Because, you know, the first 10 years of my business, I probably worked more hours and put in more effort than I did in my previous 25 plus years as an employee, right? So I didn't want to do that forever. And I said, okay, somewhere within 3 to 5 years, I want to be working 3 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, so I can have a really nice long weekend. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and this is what I need to do. So I work that plan, and it took me over a year to detail everything about No Hassle newsletters, my printing business, all these different things that I'm doing, and to have a project manager oversee everything. So literally, I don't do anything for those 4 companies other than oversee them. I talk to my project manager once a week. Everything runs. It runs fine. Do I make a little less money? Well, yes, I do, because I have people doing that, but I get to do every day, well, 3 days a week, I get to do what I really love doing. The point in telling you that story is that didn't happen overnight, and it didn't happen just because I snapped my fingers. This is what I wanted to do. I got very clear that I'd love to be able to work 3 days a week. This is how I'm going to be able to do it, and now I'm going to start making it happen. So it starts with a desire, and then you need to come up with a plan and then get your butt
in
gear.
Right. And I'm willing to bet that 5 years ago when you had a thought or the desire to do what you're doing now, that you had no idea exactly every bullet point and sub bullet point and section 3A subsection 4 of how it would work and what it would look like exactly, right? And that's where people get stuck, though, is they want to over systemize something before it even exists. You can't. I mean, having the vision by itself is enough to get started, and then refining and iterating and right. I mean, do you agree with that? I mean, however you got your team in place and put this person in that job and they did this and they did that and understanding the money and the margin and all that stuff, that just kind of had to unfold itself over time as you pursued this desire, right?
It really did. Oh, yeah. And here's the thing. This is really a stumbling block for a lot of entrepreneurs. It's that I can do it big. I can do it better, faster, and cheaper than somebody else. So why would I pay somebody to do what I can do? Well, if you can hire somebody to do some task, even if you pay them $30 an hour or whatever, but you choose to do that task, then you are only worth $30 an hour. So that's the first thing you have to realize. So for me to and I call it payroll, but they're all virtual assistants, just my old head school QuickBooks training there. So my payroll, so to speak, is such that that gives me the freedom that when I have my last call on Thursday, if you want to get inside my head a little bit, it's kind of funny. After lunch, and I can see, okay, I got 4 more or 5 more, however many calls I got, and I whittle down. When I get to my last call, I'm in such a friggin' great mood. Not that I don't love what I do, but I'm like, this is my last call. I got 4 days off. And, you know, I didn't know how I was going to do that, because actually 3 years ago, what I charged for coaching was considerably different than what I charge today. But again, I couldn't just flip the light switch and, you know, increase my prices. I kept perfecting the plans and the programs, adding more stuff. And it all just happened. But I kept driving and driving and driving, so until the point where I was making enough 3 days a week that I didn't have to work 4 or 5 days a week.
Right. Well, and that goes back to the subconscious mind thing. If you give yourself a big goal, like you said, the bigger, bolder, faster, Grant Cardone has this book called the 10X Rule, right? I'm personally not a big fan of Grant Cardone and his style, but he's absolutely on point with the idea that if you tell yourself, I'm going to make $1 million, how do I make $1 million in 1 year rather than 100,000, which was your previous unattainable, big, hairy, audacious goal? It might feel impossible, but you're forcing your brain to work for you. And it's real, because I do this in with my own stuff. And I've stretched myself the last few years in ways I never would have imagined. And things just kind of happen. And you do have bigger results, because when you're literally building a plan on how to make, you know, $1 million in a year in income rather than 100,000, you do things differently. You think differently. You think outside the box. You kind of get out of your own way a little bit.
There's a gentleman, his name is Prince EA. He's a former rapper, I understand, and he's doing these motivational videos now. I saw one, and it resonated so much, I actually showed it at my event. And he talks about how people are interviewed when they're on death's door, basically. And he said, and everybody asked him, what do you regret? And most people said they don't regret things that they did. They regret the things that they didn't do. And the message of his video is, you can't change your beginning, but starting today, you can change your ending. And I thought that is so powerful. And so for people who are playing a small, like, oh, I want to get to six figures. Well, the hell with six figures. How about $500,000 a year? Could you live on $500,000? Yeah, well, what do you got to do to get to that? That's the bigger, bolder, faster. Now, I guarantee if you're going to go for $500,000 instead of six figures, you're going to have to do some things that are probably pretty far outside your comfort zone, whether it's just doing things like becoming a great speaker, or you may have to go find a source of investment, whether it's a family member or Bank of America or whatever it is, and borrow money to significantly increase your marketing and increase your presence and things like that. And that's really where a lot of people get held back. They're not willing to put the skin in the game. You know, it's like sitting at Las Vegas and you got all these chips in front of you. Okay, I'm gonna bet this one red chip. Because if I lose that, I still got all these other chips. But, you know, people who are highly successful and who have achieved massive amounts of success, if they got an inkling, they're going to take all their chips and they're going to push them into the center of the table and they're going to bet big. They're willing to lose, but the only way you win big is if you are willing to risk.
Yeah, you got to take what I call intelligent risk. You know, it can be, you know, thoughtful. You can pray about it. You can strategize a little bit. But let's do that over the course of a week or a weekend or something and not let it take, you know, 17 years, right?
Right, exactly.
It's just silliness. And the last question I want to ask you, and then if you can tell people where they can get your book, Just Say Yes, at the end here. There's this chapter in your book called The Two F Words. I didn't read that chapter. But it piqued my curiosity, and I wrote it in my notes. What are those?
That's why I named the chapter that way. It's fear and forgiveness. And fear is probably self-explanatory, but again, we've talked a lot about the fear that holds a lot of people back, so I'll let that one lay there. But forgiveness is one that I've learned in the last 2 to 3 years of coaching some people. And by the way, I never went to school for psychology, or I've got no head training whatsoever. But in talking to people and saying, okay, this is what you need to do. This is what we're going to do. This is what it's going to – and there's no action being taken. And I'm like – and there's like two or three conversations I can vividly think of the three people. And I said, tell me what's going on. Why aren't you moving forward? And said, Jim – one person said to me, Jim, before I met you, I've spent probably 30 or 40 grand on other programs and widgets and gadgets and coaches and things like that. And I'm no further along. And I know you're telling me this and I believe you, but I just don't know if I can do that. And I said, you have to forgive yourself. I said, what? What do you mean? I said, every decision you made with the best of intentions. They don't all work out. The fact that you spent, let's just say, the fact that you spent 40 grand and it hasn't gotten you, well, it did get you to where you are right now. And what you do moving forward will determine if where you are today is what's going to be kind of written on your headstone, or what's going to be your epitaph or whatever, or are you going to move forward now, having made those mistakes? But the only way you can do that is to forgive yourself. And I actually go into some detail about how to physically do it. You can say, okay, I forgive myself. Well, I'll give one quick thing. Write it down on a 3x5 card, and whether you throw it in your fireplace or your bonfire, or you throw it in the barbecue pit, or you light it, or you cut it up into a million pieces and you dig a little tiny hole in the backyard and you bury it. And then you say to yourself, I will never think about this again. I forgive myself for all my past sins where I've said no to great opportunities or I've wasted money on quick fixes or whatever. I'm done thinking about that. I'm ready to move forward. So it's that physical act. And by the way, you say it out loud, so don't have your neighbors and friends nearby, because you don't just want your internal voice. You want your voice to be heard through your ears and in your brain. It's much more powerful. So you say it out loud and you physically destroy it by writing it down and doing whatever you're going to do. And then you've got to move forward. And all three of these people that I gave that advice to did it, and they're doing really well today. And I thought when I was writing this book, I said, I got to figure out a way to somehow tell that story, because a lot of people, myself included, when I couldn't afford to, I had this really hot business idea, and I formed a partnership with somebody. 8 months later, we're both 20 grand in the hole and we quit. So I'm like, man, I just pissed away 20 grand that I don't have. But you know what? That was a learning experience. I'm moving on, right? I don't know why I was that quick on my recovery, but we have to forgive ourselves, because not everything's going to go perfectly. Yeah. And it's just part of the journey.
We're very, very hard on ourselves, especially people that are high achievers. I think we tend to be really, really hard on ourselves. You know, when you invest in mutual funds, there's this, I don't know if it's part of the prospectus or whatever, but there's always this phrase they use where it says, you know, past performance does not equal future results, right? But the same thing is true for us. Like, I want to encourage the person listening that maybe your past performance has been, you know, mediocre, or you've had struggles or things didn't work. That has no bearing. That has nothing to do with what you can do today forward, on the changes you can make and the pivots, right? So I think that's really cool. That's a good way to wrap this up, Jim. Can you let us know how to get in contact with you or buy your book, Just Say Yes?
Absolutely. So if you want to get in contact with me, getjimpalmer.com. Getjimpalmer.com is my home base. We're giving away free copies of the book still. It's justsayyesbook.com, justsayyesbook.com. And we'll just ask for $6.95 to cover shipping and handling. We've mailed a bunch of copies overseas. I think we just sent one to Newfoundland for $28. $6.95, that's all, just for my team and the postage. But we'll send you this book. It'll go out within 24 hours. Unless you send it on Sunday, I get my team the day off, which I think is me and Chick-fil-A, I guess, the right way to think about that. But anyway, it's a really good book. And if nothing else, I really, of all my books, Josh, I think this is probably going to be my most inspirational kick in the pants with a little bit of velvet over the shoe type of a book.
Absolutely. Okay, well, go to getjimpalmer.com if you want to get in contact with Jim. Jim, I appreciate you taking the time while you're floating in the marina to talk to us about business. I think it's inspiring and it's helpful, and you've added a lot of value. So I appreciate it, and hopefully we can talk again very soon.
My pleasure, Josh. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for hanging out, friends. And from all of us here at the Quick Talk Podcast team, we hope you loved today's show. We hope that you were inspired to become a doer and not just a listener. Apply what you've heard today in your own business and watch things change for the better. Lastly, remember that all the money in the world can't save your soul. Seek first the kingdom of God, my friends. We'll see you next time.
For more information about the Quick Talk Podcast or Joshua's other businesses, visit our website, quicktalkpodcast.com. Have a blessed day.